This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, it is Aaron Norris filling in this week because we have a special topic and a special guest, and it's not one that we've ever covered in the 10 years since we've been doing the show. Today we've got Damien O'Farrell, and he is a community organizer and social entrepreneur living in Riverside. As a person of faith seeking to foster a just and sustainable community by supporting, advising, and developing initiatives of personal formation and community collaboration and integration, especially those addressing barriers of dysfunction with a concern for the poor and marginalized. I read that, and that is one of the beefiest.
That's an old.
It's a very old, but I only captured it because I knew you might not give that to me, but it encompasses a lot of what you do. But at the end of the day, for right now, he is the CEO of Path of Life Ministries, the largest homeless shelter and housing provider. Is it in just Western Riverside County, or is it all of Riverside County at this point?
It's all of Riverside County, largest provider of shelter and permanent supportive rapid rehousing. Yeah.
Okay. And then he continues to be involved in our community out here with nonprofits and initiatives like Seizing Our Destiny, the PIC Group, Riverside Neighborhood Partnership, the Rain Cross Group, and Give Big Riverside County, which that's how you and I got to really spend a lot more time together.
That's right.
And I'm just a huge fan of you and your family, and your wife is the CEO of the Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Inland Empire.
That's right.
You guys are some of the young professionals just shaping our community. And I always tell people, and I know this probably embarrasses you, but I only find out about awards in our community because either you or your wife win them.
Good thing about radio, you can't see me blush.
Exactly. So why this topic? You know, our core audience is real estate investors and realtors, and homelessness, I think, is going to get very political in the next decade because of where we're at in the market. Mm-hmm. In March, I'm the board chair of 211 Community Connect. And if you're listening and you never heard of 211, it is a California-wide service where you call this hotline, and it's like a health and human services hotline to help people get what they need in the nonprofit sectors, with churches, whether it be assistance with suicide or food and shelter. So we have access to the data. And here in Riverside mm-hmm. County, for the second year in a row when we've been producing this report, the calls for housing and homelessness specifically was double any other mm-hmm. other need. So it continues to be a trend, and I don't see that going away anytime soon.
I don't see it going away anytime soon either.
So I guess first let's back up and say, you know, why did you choose the nonprofit sector?
Well, I chose the nonprofit sector because I saw it as a way to make a difference in our community. It just made sense to me. There weren't any for-profit businesses that I was aware of that was investing as deeply into issues surrounding poverty and homelessness as the nonprofit sector. So
yeah.
I didn't choose nonprofit. I chose the area that I wanted to focus on, and then nonprofit seemed to work. That being said, I think my view of what a nonprofit is, how it operates, might be a little bit different than a lot of people's views.
Yes, that was going to be my next question. And why I wanted to read that specific front end was the social entrepreneurship. And that's feels very relatively new. A lot of people assume like if nonprofit means you make no money and you should be poor.
Unfortunately, that is a lot of the viewpoints that people have. And they also think that nonprofits should be able to do things with less margin than a for-profit business, which just, it doesn't work. I mean,
No.
We use the Starbucks coffee comparison. You know, if you see what goes into the cup of coffee, what goes into the actual cup and the service and the importing of the beans and all those sorts of things. And then you compare that to the amount of money that you spend on that cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. The majority of that is profit for the company, which is fine. That's what they're in the business to do.
Right.
And people rarely complain about that because they know the service that they're getting for that cup of coffee and they're willing to pay for it. On the other hand, if a nonprofit shows any profit at all,
yeah,
people tend to complain. But
complain, they get downright offended at times.
That's right. And what people have to understand is, for a nonprofit, all that profit by law has to go right back into the work.
Right.
So it may go into marketing that helps us expand our base to be able to do more of the work.
But right.
It's not going into anybody's pockets. And you can go online and see what I get paid.
Yeah.
Not true in the for-profit sector.
That is very true. Well, and why homelessness in particular? Why were you drawn to that unique topic?
Well, I was drawn to it because of its connection with so many other issues related to our economy. You know, I'm really interested in the cross section of behavioral health and economics and community development and really how cities work and what the quality of life for people is in those cities. And homelessness is an area that is connected to so many other areas in our economy that when they're functioning well, we can see homelessness decrease the mm-hmm. number of people in homeless situations. And when they're not functioning well, we can see the opposite. And it's a way to, number one, help people that a lot of people just don't know exist or don't know how to help. I want to try to figure that out. How can we help people get out of these situations on a very personal level? And two, a way to hopefully affect other areas of our economy by tracking back what the causes are to that homeless situation.
So Path of Life Ministries, is it a church? Or talk about a little bit about mm-hmm. Path of Life first, so we're getting
sure, all the... Sure, yeah. So Path of Life Ministries is an organization that was founded by what is now known as Path of Life Church. A little okay. confusing because the church originally, when it originally started, it was called Path of Life Ministries. Operated for several years since 1998 until 2005, operating men's and women's reentry homes, faith-based homes for guys and gals that were exiting out of the prison system, helping them reintegrate into society. And right about 2003, they were asked to take on operations of a cold weather shelter in the city of Riverside. They agreed to do that for 1 year while the city found a new operator and then kind of fell in love with the work and saw the need. Thought, you know, we can do something about that. And then the organization began to grow from there. And the Path of Life Church and Path of Life Ministries separated as two separate nonprofit organizations, one continuing a church and one continuing as a faith-based nonprofit. We receive federal funds. You know, we don't discriminate from anybody that we provide service to, require any sort of religious observance of any kind.
Okay.
But what we do is based off of what we believe Jesus taught was a way to tell good life for all of us.
Right. Well, I've been amazed at what you've been able to accomplish in the short amount of time that you've been in the CEO seat, and you've been doing some really interesting projects. So I don't know whether to start with first, the issue of homelessness, and let's unpack that a little bit, because it's got a lot of negative connotation. Yeah. I know living in New York for a number of years, I was personally in witness of people that it was clearly a fraud.
Sure.
This was just a way for them to make tax-based revenue, and maybe I'm just friends with too many cops either, that, you know, they'd know the exact number of tax-free income that the people that
sure.
we see visibility on the streets mm-hmm. that are panhandling. When we're talking about homeless, is that what we're talking about?
There are some people in those situations that are homeless. Mm-hmm. I would venture to say that the majority of people that we see panhandling on the street probably have a place to live that is not on the street. That's not true for everybody, but when you start to know the numbers, the amount of money people make on certain corners panhandling, you know they can afford a place to live because what they're able to bring in. Those individuals we don't even assume are homeless when I see them.
Okay.
When I see somebody that is obviously living out on the street, because you see them sleeping there, you know, night after night, or even one time, or pushing a cart with a lot of things. What I know is that that is what we call the visible minority. Those are those that we see. But the majority of individuals that are actually that are homeless are actually not the ones that you see on the street. They're either in shelters and they're hidden away because they have a sense of pride that they don't want to be seen as homeless, right? They're right. trying to get their life together. Or they are individuals or families that are living in uninhabitable situations, really, with other family members or friends. We're talking 10 people in a garage. And the majority of those in those family situations are children.
Mm-hmm.
And what our statistics show is the majority of homeless children that we serve are under the age of 10 years old. And so many people don't think about a child or a newborn infant, which we've seen quite a lot of, as a homeless individual. But we know that to be true. And those numbers actually far outweigh the numbers of people that we see on the street that are unsheltered or what.
Do you have any numbers, like an idea of?
Well, sure. So The last point in time count, which is a count that's drawn from going out one day for a certain period of time and encountering as many unsheltered homeless individuals on the street as possible. The last point in time count produced in Riverside County produced a number of 2,165, and that count's being updated right now, so there'll be a new number soon. But the Riverside Unified School District, for example, counts their number of actually homeless individual children at anywhere between 2,100 and 2,500 every year.
Wow. And so, how do they get that information?
Interviews with the parents, demographic information, seeing, you know, who has an address and watching the patterns. Yeah.
And in March, when we put together a panel, Fannie Mae came out for, we wanted to do, to highlight the housing affordability and homelessness issue at this annual event. So mm-hmm. Fannie Mae came out, you were on the panel, Rose Mays with the Fair Housing Council, the Economic Development of Riverside County was there, mm-hmm. and Tony Mize with the
National Corps,
and they build affordable housing.
Yes.
And I had a very interesting conversation with him, and I had never heard it framed like this before. He said, he basically told me, I'm not interested in being on your panel because this just sounds like another boring panel. Why would I want to be there? I'm like, you know what? Thanks for telling me that. You tell me. What aren't we hearing? Is it too political? Can you not say? And he said something that surprised me. He's like, I would love to see education on the panel and the environmentalists on the panel. He's like, they're two left-leaning issues that mm-hmm. are on the opposite side of the issue.
Yes.
You have somebody from education that has an understanding of all these kids who are homelessness and how that affects them lifelong. Because mm-hmm. when you're in a garage with 10 other people, you don't have the opportunities to learn. So while the state of California may be layering all these things that make it more difficult to do affordable housing projects, one of the hurdles. And I had that blew my mind. I had never heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
So to hear those kind of numbers, though, is just scary.
Well, and that's why having conversations like this are so helpful, because we're looking to create win-win situations all around. We want the economy to do well. We want those in the private sector, specifically within real estate, to do well. And we also want families that are not in those situations to be able to do well, at least have the opportunity to have some self-makingness in their life. But what we are seeing is that instead of conversing, we're talking at one another. And mm-hmm. we're looking at trying not to find middle ground, but to find the true things that work. What are the best practices? What are the things that are going to create the most opportunity for everybody to move forward? That's what we're interested in.
And to navigate through all the bureaucracies that is the county and the city level and
sure.
national funding. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, I mean, so you mentioned it being a political thing. One, aside from, I think that National Corps, both Tony Mize and Steve Pontell, are doing an excellent job of getting the word out there about the political nature of those types of decisions and their effect on the ability for people who do affordable housing and do it very well in a mm-hmm. way that's good for the neighborhood, how it's making it more difficult for them to do that. And then the effects that has on the community, which I can touch on in a minute. But the other thing that makes it political on the local level is that, people call their council members mm-hmm. about somebody that's homeless out in front of their business, and rightfully so, because they're worried about somebody detracting from their sales and from making people uncomfortable to come in and out. And some people are not mentally stable. Mm-hmm. And so some individuals that are in that situation, they do cause issues for the business and the patrons. And that is the number one call that our council members in Riverside right now get. And that makes it political, because the council member wants to respond to their constituents. They want to address the issue. However, they have very few tools in their tool chest to be able to
write a ticket. Okay.
That's a tool that they have. There's not enough housing, and so there's not housing that the council member can point that person to,
right,
whether or not they would take it. And, mm-hmm. and so some people say, well, people choose to be in that way. Well, we know from experience that even people that refuse help at first, once they understand that it's real and it's something that is good for them, mm-hmm. Come around. They change mind. We placed over almost 200 people from the streets into housing with leases in their own name, scattered site throughout the entire county last year. Those were individuals that were literally on the streets from 15 to up to 31 years.
That is insane.
And those are people that would chase our staff away and say no at first until trust was built and they understood, what you're offering is real. So we have a very different understanding of that notion of they just don't want it. And even if every person who is homeless right now said, I am willing to do whatever I have to get into home, get into a home, get off the street, there is not enough housing for them to get into.
Right. And that's a huge problem. Well, will we stop building after the downturn? And we haven't built really that much in 8 years, and it's still just now picking up.
Sure.
And you've got the housing affordability issue, people getting locked out, or just demographics changing. They're just waiting. Mm-hmm. So there's just a confluence of things that are happening at the same time that are making this issue very difficult.
Yeah, we can maybe talk about that in the next segment.
I know. I can already see this first segment, and I promise there's going to be opportunities specific to real estate, and I was really excited to hear about more, and I don't want to... I'll tease everybody. In the next session, we'll talk a lot more about that. Are you at all concerned? I know some of the funding that you get is from HUD, and I guess we'll touch... I don't want this to be super political, but the Trump administration has come down and says they want to cut HUD funding quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Is that a big concern in the nonprofit realm? And isn't that where a lot of the housing sector gets some of those monies to accomplish these things?
Yeah, I'll say that the nonprofit sector that receives money from HUD and other sources, such as community development block grants and emergency solutions grants and whatnot, are nervous because they don't know what's going to happen. And many of those organizations depend upon that funding. And we would be one of them that depends upon that funding to be able to do the good things that we're doing.
Right.
You know, we are working as an organization on trying to become less dependent upon government funds by doing social enterprises and, you know, creating revenue sources that are in line with our mission and those sorts of things. But that takes time, just like any business does. And we still have the amount of need still outweighs the number of resources or amount of resources that we currently have. So we're working towards doing that. And I'll say this, that it looks like the CDBG funding and the ESG funding that was originally slated to be cut in the skinny budgets is not going to be cut, at least right now, which is good, because at least that would, if we found out in a time in the future that they would be cut, we'd have some time to plan.
Okay.
Right. To just cut off a revenue source immediately is dangerous, and people would suffer. The communities would suffer. On the other hand, on HUD's side, you know, there are no specific cuts that are being suggested yet. There are a lot of things that HUD has been doing very well by investing in best practices that are actually proving results and helping individuals move out of homeless situations and into very stable, long-term stable situations. And if those were cut, that would be bad. We want HUD to continue to invest in what's working, the best practices that have proven results.
Okay.
On the other hand, there are a lot of requirements that comes with receiving HUD funding that as a business just don't make sense. Despite the very long turnaround time and reimbursement costs,
right,
you know, where we have to be able to float sometimes up to 6 months of program costs.
It takes them 6 months to reimburse?
It has at times when it gets really slow. You know, if we could see a government shutdown, then it could even be longer. And so that's a dangerous position to be in. But then also the amount of requirements on the administrative side. So you're forcing a nonprofit that they don't want to pay for administration on to have a huge administrative burden. It's flip-flopped. And so there needs to be a lot more flexibility in the way that those funds are used, because there are some things that we know work that HUD won't allow us to spend their funds on. But we know in order to keep somebody in their home while they transition out of a lifestyle of homelessness or extreme poverty, they require those supports. And so it forces us to piece together a lot of different funding sources that becomes burdensome.
Oh my goodness. I'm trying to figure out what we can cover in just the last 5 minutes that we have that would make sense for this segment. When we were talking about the numbers as far as the homelessness, do you have a sense of how much are the visible and how much are the invisible that you were talking about? Is there a percentage that you have in mind?
It would be anecdotal. Really would be. I just, knowing the counts, you use those counts of just the children in the school district, and the majority of those children are in families who are, you wouldn't see them on the street and think that they're homeless.
Right.
But they are. So that's a large number. And then you compare that with those that, even if every single homeless individual or individual in homeless situation that was amongst those 2,165 in Riverside County were the ones out on the street, which they're not, that's, you know, 30% maybe of the of the full population. Maybe. Wow. It's anecdotal, but you know, extrapolating from those numbers that we've seen.
And I think about Riverside County itself, you know, our listeners all over California, but I don't think it's that different. But I think Riverside County is one of the largest counties in the country. Mm-hmm. And so you've got everything from Blythe, you know, Temecula, Riverside, Corona, you know, we have 26 cities in our county. Mm-hmm. We're huge. And just getting all these entities to work together. Not every city has a way to deal with this. So do they defer to you, and do they support you at the city level to help with the issues?
There's lots of different answers to that. So we have a very good partnership with the city of Riverside, working with, they actually have a team, an outreach team that goes out and refers people to us, brings them to the shelter that we operate. And we have a very strong partnership in helping people get into housing that is available. We have a great partnership directly with the city of Paris, where we provide direct outreach services to individuals. We've helped quite a few individuals exit from the streets of Paris to the to shelter and then to housing. In fact, Paris is one of the cities in the last point in time count that had a pretty drastic decrease in the number of homeless situations that they encountered. And then we have working relationships throughout the rest of the county, because we do serve the entire Riverside County. But that's mostly through the county service offices. So Department of Public Social Services and the EDA, we have direct working relationships with their staff. Okay. There are some exciting things coming forward in the East County with the Coachella Valley Association of Governments, CVAG. They asked for an idea of what it would look like to do shelter in a different way, multi-site model, utilizing private homes for emergency housing and moving people, use it as a bridge to move people into permanent housing of their own. And so we did submit a proposal, and there's multiple cities that are working on committing funding towards that. They like our model, and now we're just in the process of negotiating how that would actually look to make sure that we can do the job if we move forward with it. So,
well, we mentioned the council member thing. You know, is there a fear that if one city is doing it, you know, all the other cities are sitting there homeless, like, here's a bus ticket to Riverside kind of thing?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, there is some truth to some of that.
Oh, there is?
Yes. Okay. And so I can't say that the cities have directed any of their departments to send people.
Okay.
But we have had people show up at the shelter, for example, that we run in Riverside, and they're dropped off by, I won't name the organizations, but they're dropped off by organizations connected to other cities. And it's because there's no other place for them to go, and this person wants shelter. Right. So here's the thing that I say about that, which should, hopefully, if I say it well enough, should ease the concerns of some of the cities that do want to look towards doing something like what we're doing, which is people seeking shelter to get out of homeless situations don't want to stay homeless, and they're not the ones that are currently in a position where they're staying out in the street.
Oh, that makes sense.
They're actually trying to change their situation. So they're trying to make use of the shelter and the different opportunities that come along with that.
Okay.
And they're the ones trying to get out of the situation. So that's not 100% true in every situation, of course, but that is mostly true.
Well, just the fact that you can convert somebody from spending 15 to 30 years of their life on the streets to actually get them in to a shelter situation is pretty spectacular. So I can't wait to talk a little bit more about that in our next segment.
But not just shelter, but housing.
Housing,
private market housing.
And that's what we're going to talk into. To the next segment. What housing I'm excited first. About. Housing yes. first. Okay, so you have to hang on to the second segment for that. But if they want to find out more information about upcoming events for you and how they can get involved, where should they go?
They should go to www.thepathoflife.com.
Fantastic. With that, we are out of time, and you have an upcoming event. What's the date?
Thank you. June 3rd, held at Riverside Medical Clinic on the corner of Arlington and Brockton in the city of Riverside. It's called the Pub and Grub Challenge, and so a really, really fun event featuring men who cook. There's community groups that come out and cook small bites, and the community gets to come in and test all the food and vote on the best, and we have some celebrity chefs that will be selecting some best dishes. We also have some people that are competing in a brewing competition, so there'll be brew tastings and some live music, Corvette show, and Miss California will be there if anybody has interested in that. So
wow, that sounds like a great event. Low calorie too.
And that's right. It's really, really fun. So 4 to 8 p.m. on June 3rd
at
Riverside Medical Clinic.
Got it. All right, well, thank you for your time. Thanks for coming out.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.